Welcome once again to Rampage on the Airwaves. This is the History of Local Music Part 4. My name is Wayne Thunder, and I am talking with a pseudo Malay accent because, number one, a lot of people say my Malay accent very funny, and also number two, because the song you are hearing in the background is a song called Midnight in Malaya, played by my father's band but written by some don't know old school band from very very long time ago. That's why it's not even Midnight in Malaysia, it is Midnight in Malaya. On today's show, we are wrapping up the History of Local Music series. As you know, the last part 1, part 2, part 3, we covered the whole history of local music through the perspective of Mr. Leonard Susay, who is Singapore's number one independent local music producer. As I mentioned on the previous shows, this one actually is not a complete history of local music, but really only like a partial history told through the perspective of Leonard Susay. If I had talked about the whole history of local music until my mother father time, I think I can talk until the whole Kallang River also dry up. And if you are wondering what happened to Little Rampage, as we mentioned in the last show, he has actually left, fly away to Holland where the grass is green. So that is why you have to put up with me for at least another one more episode while we wait for Little Rampage to settle down and get himself smoked up. I mean, set up in Holland. Hey, this one local music podcast, right?
Yes.
Then shut up and start talking about local music lah.
Oh, okay lah.
The first band that we want to talk about on the history of local music part 4 is Fish Tank. Now, Fish Tank are very old. Actually, they're not that old lah, but they've been around a long time. Since the 90s, they play ska music. They ska with a bit of punk flavor as well. They released quite a few albums already, and they have a very, very big... Hey, shut up lah.
Fish Tank are one of the most popular underground ska bands. You know, a lot of people know who Fish Tank are. A lot of people have heard about stories about Fish Tank. Mm. You know, and they've released actually quite a few albums already. And whenever they play shows, you know, a huge crowd always shows up. I worked with Fish Tank on the previous album, and they're also recording the latest album right now with Snakeweed. They are very, very good band, very tight band. Yeah. You know, they can finish like 3 songs in one day. The problems we had with the band, I mean, 2 times, right, when we were recording vocals, right, the singer got involved in motorbike accidents. So one time his leg was crushed. Second time, it just happened recently again, another motorbike accident, you know. So I don't know whether it's bad luck or, you know, it's... I mean, I've seen the hardship that they go through. I mean, it's not easy when, you know, they have to work and then earn money and then, you know, do an album.
Yeah.
But I've seen them at gigs and all that. And they've played with Plain Sunset a lot of times also, because some of the members from Plain Sunset also play in Fish Tank. And the same thing happens, you know, the ska kids and then the punk kids will be there. And then, you know, they'll be fighting and disrupting the gig. But it's all in the name of fun, lah. I mean, the band always has fun, and the band always tells the crowd not to fight and to, you know, just chill out and listen to the music, lah. Mm. But listening to Fish Tank on stage or listening to Plain Sunset on stage, you get very worked up. I don't know why. And sometimes I get that feeling also. Yeah. I feel like I want to punch somebody. You know, it usually leads to moshing and stage diving and all that, which eventually...
But that's a good thing,
It's a good thing, which eventually ends in fighting, I've seen girls also fight, man, at Fish Tank gigs. Like, girls pulling hair and punching each other, and then, you know, the boyfriend standing around just laughing. It's ridiculous, but, you know, it's very hard for a gig organizer or concert promoter to, you know, showcase them when they have this reputation of playing and trouble following them. And you have this perception that, you know, whenever Fish Tank plays, the gig is going to end in disaster, which is very unfair to the band because, you know, they don't go out there and promote violence. You know, it's kids who find out, oh, Fish Tank's going to play here, let's go. Then they go there, you know, they bring like knives and all that.
Yeah.
In fact, the last Babies that Fish Tank played, it was this year.
Mm.
You know, some guys got arrested because they brought bloody knives into the venue and they were trying to stab somebody. I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, gigs shouldn't be like that. You know, it just brings down the whole scene. And Fish Tank was really, really upset that this happened because, you know, they don't want to be known as a band that promotes violence or anything.
Mm.
A lot of our younger bands actually do look up to Fish Tank.
Yeah.
I mean, these bands are not necessarily ska bands. You know, they could be emo bands, rock bands, but they always, you know, think of Fish Tank as being like their godfathers. And it's a band that they try to emulate, like, you know, play a lot of shows, get a lot of fans and, you know, release albums and stuff.
Unfortunately, despite my best efforts over the past 6 weeks or so at least to try and hunt down a Fish Tank track, no one bothered to get back to me, which was very, very frustrating. But anyway, it's too bad I can't play a Fish Tank track for you. And that means we can move on to the next band, and I'll leave Leonard to introduce them with this little story.
I took a taxi today to work. I was talking to the taxi driver and then he was asking me about what I did for a living, and I said, you know, I work in the music line, I record bands and all that. Then he was talking, oh, Singapore music, cannot lah, no market lah. Then he said, Taiwan, they have the singers. Hong Kong, they have the actors. What does Singapore have? Then I said, uncle, you don't know, Singapore has Ronin. And he was like, ha.
Ronin need no introduction. They are one of the highest profile Singapore rock bands out there at the moment, and they've got already number one songs like Black Maria and One More Moment and Crazy Sun and all that. So really, you don't need me to tell you any more about them. They are the band that I feel are most in touch with the current teenage generation, especially in Leping's case, quite literally. So obviously they are not history yet. They are still very, very much active, but they have already made history in their relatively short careers, and that's why I thought they merited a inclusion into the History of Local Music Part 4. And fittingly enough, for this generation's most outspoken and controversial Singapore rock band, I dug up a lot of interesting stories from Leonard, so I will let him entertain you with this one.
When I first met Ronin, right, I mean, they came to the studio, they gave me a call. I think it was Sean who called me, and he said that they heard the Botfuck CD and they're very inspired, and they said they wanted to record something on their own. And then I said, okay, you know, come to the studio, let me meet you guys. So one fine day, it was, I think, late at night, the five of them strolled in to the studio, and Levin, or Leping is his real name, was the last one to come in. And then he had this swagger, where he was wearing sunglasses. I was thinking, shit, it's late at night, he's wearing sunglasses. And then all of them came and sat on the sofa, and then Sean said, oh, this is my band. And then he introduced me to Levin, but Levin didn't say a word. He just took out a business card from his wallet and then handed it to me. So I thought, oh, maybe he's giving me his business card. And I looked at it, and it was a picture of himself with the word Levin, singer. I was like, what the fuck? Damn, Hao Lian Man is Hokkien rock band. So I instinctively thought they were Hokkien rock band because they look like, you know, abings. Sean started talking to me about music Then he said, oh, we don't play Chinese music We're actually a rock band. And then Leping started speaking, and the first thing he said to me was, I like your sound.
Okay.
And I was like, okay, I really, really like your sound. I was trying to control my laughter and, you know, slowly they start talking. They're telling me about Jimi Hendrix, about Led Zeppelin, and about, you know, John Bonham, about Jimmy Page and all that. And then I realized that, oh, okay, they were a classic rock band, not a Hokkien abing band. And let me tell you this, they're the only band, right, that's ever recorded in Snakeweed, right, that I've thrown out of the studio 3 times because they get on my nerves. Let me give you an example. We were recording a song, it was Crazy Sun. We finished everything, finished all the recordings and all that, and then we were mixing. So they said, okay, let's mix the song. And I started mixing the song, and then when the song was done, I wanted to save the song as, you know, as a finished mix. And then all of a sudden Sean pointed his finger and said, Leonard, before you save it, can I do my solo now? And I was like, what the fuck? And I remember throwing my mouse again. And I was like, what the fuck? You asked me to mix the song, and then now you want to do your solo? And he was like, I don't know the whole process, so, you know, I thought we could do our solo after we finish everything. And I was like, get out. So they got out of the studio, and then they went downstairs for a while, then they came up, and then they apologized. They said, can you please explain to us the process of mixing, because we don't understand. And then I said, okay, usually you do everything, all your parts first, you know. It's like how you bake a cake, you put the cake in the oven after you've done everything, right? And then you turn it on, and then when the timer goes off, you take the cake out, and then you don't suddenly say, okay, now I want to put my egg yolk into it.
Yeah, you can't put new chocolate chips in there.
Yeah, yeah. So Precisely lah. So that was what happened lah. And then they explained to me that they didn't understand, they didn't know the whole process lah. So I said okay lah, okay. So I did the guitar solo and everything, and then we finished recording and I mixed it again. And after I mixed it, Leping suddenly says, Leonard, can I do vocals? And I was like, it got to everyone's head, but it didn't get to Leping's head. Like, he completely didn't understand what I was trying to say. So I couldn't tell him the same Bake the Cake story again. So I just told him to fuck off, which they did lah. And then they came back a few days later, sorry Leonard, I didn't understand again. I mean, there were very, very different incidents lah. A lot of incidents that just forced me to throw them out of the studio lah. There was one time Levin and Darren started arguing in the studio. Yeah. And this was nothing related to the band or music lah. It was, yeah, I don't know, for some stupid thing ah. And then Darren said, I punch you, okay? And then Leping said, you try ah. And then they really started fighting. Kung fu and everything. They started fighting right in front of me. And then I was like, take your fight somewhere else. Like, get the fuck out! You know, so they went downstairs and they sorted their problem. Then they came back, oh, sorry.
Juicy stuff indeed, and you heard it here first on Rampage on the Airwaves. Now, as a musician, I always wondered, if you went up to, say, Weezer or Metallica or whatever, and you asked them, hey, what was your first gig ever like? What sort of answer would they give you? And in the case of Ronin, Leonard has the full story. Here it is.
I remember attending their first gig.
Yeah.
It was damn funny because they said they were playing at some parachute jumping event . And this was the first time that they're going to play in front of an audience. And then Leping said, you better come. So I said, okay, I promise I'll go. And I asked Electrical if they wanted to go. So, you know, the whole band said they didn't mind because they wanted to see Rodin. And we showed up at the gig and there were a total of 6 people in the audience. The 6 were Daniel Sassoon, David Tan, Desmond Goh, William Lim Jr., Amanda Ling, and myself. There's no one else. And it was like ridiculous lah. I mean, this is a huge event and there are only 6 people attending. And then Leping started talking to the crowd like as if there were 60,000 people. He was like, yeah, to all you people out there, you know, this next song is gonna be Black Maria. You know, like, and all you 60,000 fans out there, stop moshing. And then we were, 6 of us were just standing there listening to the crickets. But it was damn funny lah. But they put on a really, really good show for the 6 of us lah.
And no feature on Ronin would be complete without a story involving their iconic, talismanic and charismatic and controversial singer Levin Wee, otherwise known as Leping to most of us. He is arguably the most recognizable local musician out there today, not just because he's an albino, but because of the way he carries himself on stage. If you have seen Ronin live, then you will definitely be familiar with his hip-thrusting and loose-tongued antics on stage. It's a persona that's got him in trouble on several occasions, to the point where his reputation sometimes precedes him, I think. But it's also a very, very important part of the appeal of why Ronin are so popular among the youth in this country.
Leping, I don't know what to say about him lah. I mean, every time we have this long conversation, I tell him, please don't use vulgarities on stage. Please don't go and curse the school teacher or the school principal. Please don't go and threaten kids who are watching your show to come on stage and fight with you. You know, and he does that all the time. He's still doing it lah. And I remember last year's Zook Out, right? He was on stage and he was shouting like, fucking bastard, you fucking chibai. You know, just shouting at random people in the crowd. Like people who were just walking past. And I was like, oh shit, you know, it's going to happen all over again. And then he suddenly turned to the crowd and he says, all you fucking bastards want to get your fucking faces on MTV, step the fuck forward. And then, you know, right, I was doing the sound. So right in front of me were 3 policemen. And I thought, oh no, it's going to be a whole bot fucks incident again. So every time he said the word fuck, right, they took out their notepad and they wrote it down. In case someone complained, you know, they could use that as evidence. And all of a sudden, this man comes up to me and he starts shouting at me. He says, turn it off, you know. And I was like, who's this guy? Because he's wearing this black t-shirt which said security.
Yeah.
And he kept shouting at me, turn off the vocalist mic, turn it off. And then I just I wanted to say fuck you and, you know, like, go away. Because I really thought he was some security guy. So I didn't listen to him. Then he came and stood right in front of me. And then I looked around and everyone beside me, right, was silent and they all started to turn and walk away. So I was like, what the fuck? Why is everyone leaving me alone? And then this guy starts shouting at me. He said, you better turn it off or you're getting, get out of here.
Yeah.
So I thought, okay. So I turn off the volume. And then he turns and then he gives me the thumbs up and he walks away. And I'm thinking, like, who's this fucker? Come and, you know, tell me what to do. Then after all this crew and all that, they came back and they said, do you know who's that? I said, I don't know. I said, that's Lincoln Ching, the owner of Zouk. Then I was like, oh, okay. And throughout that whole set, right, that Ronin played after that, all you could hear from Leping was like mumbling. Because I didn't dare bring up his vocal mic anymore, because he was just cursing and swearing at everyone. And Ronin had been banned from Zookout lah. But that's Ronin, you see, that's the character.
Yeah.
You know, and it defines who they are.
Yeah.
You know, and they are not gonna bow down to any authority or authoritative figure, you know. They are a voice for a whole new generation.
That's young the basis. Kids. Yeah, that's the basis for the entire rock and roll spirit, man.
Yeah, it is lah, and that's why they're so popular, because a lot of kids love them, a lot of kids adore them, and a lot of kids like what they are doing.
Ronin with the very anthemic Do What Thou Wilt. Moving on to a band that you could argue is on the opposite end of the spectrum, none other than Electrico. Why I say they're on the opposite end of the spectrum from Ronin is because Electrico have always had this very media-friendly pop image, and it does reflect in their songs. Obviously, Electrico songs are very polished, very catchy, very melodic, and very pop flavor. And Electrico are a band that you could definitely say have made the biggest impression on the mainstream audience in this country. But a lot of people may not know that their history goes back quite far, as I discovered from Leonard.
The first time I actually met Electrico was back in 1999. I was working with Augerie at that time.
This was when they were still known as Electric Company.
Yeah, they were Electric Company. Actually, it goes way back, because I actually knew Brian Colasso, who's the elder brother of Keith Colasso, who was the original guitarist of Electrico. So last time when we were kids and all that, I used to go to Brian's house and I see Keith growing up and all that.
Yeah.
And Keith had his group of friends who happened to be Electrico.
Yeah.
Electric Company at that time.
Yeah.
So I saw a very young Sec 1, Sec 2 David Tan, who was very pudgy at that time. You know, and then Keith was a skinny, scrawny young guy. And they were all living around the Serangoon Gardens area.
Yeah.
And they were called the Goonies. I didn't see them for many years after that, until about 1999, when they were all grown up, when they all finished school and all that.
Yeah.
And I was recording this band called Augerie, which is in episode 1. We were commissioned by MTV at that time to do a song for their VJs. The VJs at that time were Nadia Hutagalong, Sonia Cooling, Sarah Sechan. The band that was chosen to play this song was Augerie.
Yeah.
It was actually a pop-punk song. And Augerie agreed to do it, but we didn't have the song. And then Brian was saying that the song that was chosen was this song by this band called Electric Company.
Yeah.
You know, and Electric Company was recording at a studio called Form.
Yeah.
So I went down to Form Studios and I met Electric Company, and I realized it was Keith's band, it was David's band, you know, yeah. Desmond and William.
Yeah, yeah.
So when we were in the studio, I mean, the sound engineer played back songs that Electric Company was recording, and yeah. I heard some of the songs, and you know, I thought, hey, this is a really good band, because you know, the songs were really catchy, really fun. And, you know, like, I looked at the band and, you know, they're good looking guys, very easy to market and promote. You know, I was really looking forward to the release of the album. And then the recession hit. So when the recession hit, right, Form closed down. So when they closed down, right, the master tapes are gone. So everything that Electric Company recorded, right, was gone. You know, and they couldn't use any of the songs. Yeah, and I thought, oh shit, you know, like, this band has bad luck too. It wasn't until a few years later that I met them again. And this time I told them, you know, I'm working at the mastering suite, so let's record an album. Then Dave said, like, okay, let's do it. And one day Chong erases the whole hard drive. And then everything the Electric Company did was gone again. And I was thinking, oh, this band has really, really bad luck. You know, when I opened Snake Weed, William, who's the drummer of Electric Company, I told him to ask Dave to come and start recording the so-called first album, which is actually the third album. Then the band came to see me. It was Dave, William, and Desmond. After that, Dan joined the band. And when they came to see me, you know, I told them, okay, this time I'm not going to erase the hard drive. You know, nothing is going to happen. We're going to finish this album and put it out. And then one day, right, I mean, everything bad happened. It was like, you know, William broke up with his girlfriend. My ex-girlfriend broke up with me. And then Dave's girlfriend broke up with him. And Dan broke up with his girlfriend. And we're all really depressed. And we say, hey, it's the best time to record an album. Because when you're really upset and depressed, you know, that's when, you know, your creative juices all start flowing. And they said, okay, let's do it. So we started recording, and that was so much more inside.
So there you have it, the full scoop on the origin of Electrical, one of Singapore's most important bands. But wait, I hear you asking, what about Amanda? Where does she come in the picture? You are right. I also asked that question to Leonard, and being the well of information that he is, he had the story on that as well.
We were halfway through finishing the album. We realized that there was something missing because William was playing all the keyboard parts at that time. But then whenever they went and played live, you know, it was just the four of them and, you know, the keyboard parts are all missing. And keyboards are an integral part of the songs. And we were thinking of trying to find a keyboardist to play the parts that, you know, William had played. We looked around and we came up with a few names and all that. And then Bay Beats happened. So when Bay Beats happened, Electrical played. But before Electrical played, there was this band called Throb. So Throb was playing and everyone was just looking at the keyboardist of Throb. And nobody was paying attention to the band. And then we were just like looking at this girl that was playing keyboards and we thought that she should be the one playing for Electrical. And then there was this other event at the Guinness Theatre. And Amanda happened to be there. And, you know, we were looking at her and thinking, yeah, actually, you know, someone should just go up and ask her. So I told Dave, go and talk to her. And Dave was like, ask somebody else. And then I said, hey, Desmond, go and ask her to join the band. And then Desmond was like, who? Which one? I said, that girl there. Then he was like, huh? Oh, that girl, she's from Trop, no? I said, never mind, I don't care, just go and ask her. Then he said, okay, boss, I'll do it. So he mustered enough courage. And then the event ended, and they all went across to the coffee shop to have, you know, drinks. And Amanda was sitting together with members of Fish Tank and members of Trop. And then Desmond runs across the street. He gets down on his knees and then he tells her, will you join my band? You know? And then he's like, all of us were like stunned because we didn't know Desmond was, you know, was going to do that. I mean, we thought he was just going to go there and say like, hi, you know, my name is Desmond. I play for Electrical. But he went down on his knees and he begged her to join the band. And then she said, okay. You know, and it was just like that, that they happened to get Electrical. I mean, they happened to get Amanda into the band.
Walani, top quality advice on how to pull someone into your band. So anyway, besides being one of Singapore's most prominent local bands, Electrical have also made their mark in that they have toured overseas, which is a feat that not many Singapore bands can lay claim to. Electrical, back in 2005, actually embarked on a national tour of Australia, taking in the main states, Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane, I think Perth as well. And because I was based in Melbourne at that time with the Suns, and we were fortunate enough to be able to catch Electrical at the ESPY, one of our favourite Melbourne venues, and no prizes for guessing who came along for the ride as well.
We actually went to Melbourne. We missed the Suns' performance by one day. It was one day, right?
I think so.
Yeah, because the Suns were playing somewhere, and then by the time we arrived, the gig ended. So we didn't get to see the Suns play, but then Sanjeev Velu said, don't worry, you know, we'll throw our own gig for you guys. Because you guys came all the way here, so we're going to throw our own gig. So you're thinking, okay lah, you know, like, where is this gig going to be thrown? And then Sanjay Velo said, in my bedroom. And we thought, okay, a gig in the bedroom ah. And then we went to the son's house. They had this whole like jamming studio thing set up in one of the rooms ah. It was their practice room, and that was where the gig was going to be held. So after a few drinks, alcoholic beverages, all of us were really stoned and high lah. And then, you know, we were just like laughing and jumping around. And then the stunts started to play. And then it was like a whole gig. Okay, Sanjay was like talking to us like he was talking to 100,000 people. Like, we started moshing. I remember like carrying Desmond, and you know, we were moshing in this bedroom. And you know, it was like one of the best gigs that we had, like, one of the best experiences that we had in Melbourne.
I have vivid memories of that experience, and there are plenty more stories where that came from, but I probably can't share them with you without having to implicate everyone into a whole lot of trouble. So what goes on the road will stay on the road. So let's move on to the next most interesting thing, which is the story behind their number one song. Here's Leonard again.
You know, the whole band hates the song. Even I hate the song. You know, Dave never wanted to record the song, you know, but we were short of songs when we were putting out So Much More Inside. And we're thinking, oh shit, like, let's do another song and make it 10 songs or 12 songs or whatever. And William said, ah yeah, let's just use I Want You lah, because, you know, we've worked on that song before. And then we called Dave, and Dave said, no way am I going to do I Want You. I don't want to do I Want You at all. I hate that song. So we thought, okay, then might we just record it.
Yeah.
One day when Dave is here doing the other song, we'll just play I Want You and make him sing it lah. And that's what happened lah. He came to the studio, and then we had already recorded I Want You, and we played it to him, and he said, hey Dave, just sing it lah. Fuck lah, just sing it. And he was like, shit lah, okay lah, okay. So he sang the song, and it was the biggest song of Electrical's career, because it was the song that actually opened the doors for everything. You know, it was a song that went to number one, that made it possible for Puck Jelly's Come Home Soon, for, you know, Ronin's Black Maria to, you know, hit the chart. Dave still hates the song, and the whole band still hates the song, but every time they play a gig, you know, people will be shouting, I want you, I want you, I want you. Puck Jelly are made up of Sam Cooper, Matt Cooper, and Masashi Kimura. I mean, a lot of people say that they are foreigners and they shouldn't be considered a local band, but I think they've done so much, you know, to bring up the local scene. You know, they never make references to where they come from and all that. I mean, they always consider themselves to be a local band, a local Singapore band. It was interesting because when Electrical charted with I Want You, and when it went to number one, Puck Jelly was climbing up the charts also at the same time. So when Electrical dropped from number one, Puck Jelly took over with Come Home Soon. So, you know, it was not just a coincidence, but it was, you know, it proved that local songs do have charting abilities, and local songs can, you know, make the charts and make number one. And then they had another guitarist. I don't want to mention names lah, but he was kicked out of the band earlier on because, you know, he didn't show the same kind of like work ethic and same kind of discipline lah. There was one day when we were recording, and I got off my seat to go to the toilet, and this other guitarist, the other one that left the band, was making out with this girl on my couch in the other room. I think she was like half naked, so I just walked past him and went to the toilet and pretended not to look. And I thought, you know, that would be a sign for him to stop what he was doing, or maybe for the girl to cover up and, you know, like pretend nothing was happening. But when I walked back, I mean, they're still going at it, and then they just looked at me and they just continued like as if nothing was happening. It's quite weird lah, because, you know, I didn't know whether to tell him to get out of the studio or go and find a hotel room or just leave him alone lah. Eventually I just left him alone lah. So that's one story of Puck Jelly.
Another story that I think a lot of you would be interested by is the fact that the song you're hearing in the background there, You by Puck Jelly, was actually co-written by none other than Mr. Leonard Susay himself. I didn't know this until he told me, so I got him to spill the beans on it all.
The song You, a lot of people like that song, but most people don't know that that song is about my ex-girlfriend. It so happened that Sam and I both ended our relationship with our girlfriends at the same time also, and you know, Sam was really depressed and I was depressed, and he said, like, you know, why don't we just do a song about our ex-girlfriends? And he said, okay, he'll do a Ransom Letter, which was written the same time as You was written. So Ransom Letter is about his relationship with his ex-girlfriend, and You is about my relationship with my ex-girlfriend. We went to Perth for holiday, my ex-girlfriend and I. This was when we were still in a relationship. And if you listen to the lyrics, it says, watching X-Files ain't the same anymore. You know, it's about, you know, us doing nothing but, you know, watching DVDs every day, and, you know, going to Perth and catching the sunrise on our first date. And it's one of my favorite Park Jelly songs. Shopping with you is never a bore. I save up all my cash to spend on things that you adore. Watching sunsets ain't the same anymore. Remember curling up in bed, doing things behind closed doors.
That takes my vote for strangest ending in a local song ever. So anyway, moving on to the final band of the History of Local Music series part 4 is yet again another band that I feel is inappropriate for me to talk about because I'm still a part of the band. So I shall leave it to Leonard to actually speak on our behalf.
The Suns were a band actually that was formed in Australia. Amazingly, they used to be called the Botfucks. They were a Singapore band. They moved to Australia and then they reformed as the Suns. This was at a point in time when, you know, the Botfucks were arrested after a gig at Youth Park when Sanjeev Velu said, Kaninabe Chow Chi Bai on stage. It was at that time that we knew that, you know, the Botfucks couldn't exist anymore because, you know, like, the whole Singapore government is going to come down on them. And they felt like, fuck, you know, this is the wrong country, let's get out of here. So they moved to Australia and they reformed as the Suns. Why the Suns are important is because they were one of the first few bands to actually be proactive and take the music further. You know, a lot of Singapore bands say, oh, we want to play in this country, we want, you know, get distributed in this country or that country. But then they don't do anything about it. But the Suns packed their bags and moved to Australia to do something about the music, you know, because they realized that Singapore was too small a country for them. The Suns are an international band. Electrico is not an international band yet. You know, they're just starting out as an international band, but the Suns have already established themselves as one. You know, a lot of the younger bands or a lot of the more established bands who, you know, who want to take the music further should actually follow the Suns' lead.
I'm not so sure about that, because I can tell you for sure that what we did was just absolutely crazy. Although I have to say that I have not regretted it for a single moment. It really was an eye-opening experience seeing the amazing level of professionalism and dedication it took for, you know, successful bands in Australia to actually sustain themselves and be able to make a good living playing their music.
I remember telling a lot of people that they really took their music very seriously because, you know, they would have day jobs and then come back at about 1 o'clock and then practice for the next 6 hours. So they did this every day. I mean, which local band does this? Nobody. You know, nobody practices for 6 hours every single day. And by doing this, I mean, they were showing the way. I mean, they showed a lot of Singaporean bands that this is how things should be done if you want to improve, if you want to, you know, get to a point where you can compete with the international bands. The way the Suns approach their music and the way they approach their recording is very, very different from all the other bands that I know. I mean, all the other bands, usually they come here with an idea of what they want, you know, and then they leave me up to do it. In the son's case, it's very different because they already know what they want. They've been practicing for ages. And I remember last time and all, Sanjeev Velu would come and give me a huge folder, you know, with every song in it, with all the song lyrics. I mean, no other band has done this. Jolly!
I remember, you know, that folder.
Yeah, he would give me a folder and he said, okay, Leonard, study the songs. These are the songs. This is what I want. And then beside every song, right, was a reference. Okay, this song, these are our references. And then he'd give me, like, okay, some of the, you know, more famous bands like Weezer and all that. You know, these were references that they wanted me to listen to, like, to approach their music. It just shows how prepared they are, like, and, you know, how much work and effort they put into pre-production even before recording it even starts. Mm. Every band thinks that recording is recording, and then, you know, what happens after that is what happens. But the Suns plan everything methodically. They all push themselves to give out the best. And it shows, it actually shows on the recording. I mean, if you listen to the Suns CD, it's very hard to point out a mistake. Do you
And that's a wrap for the History of Local Music series on Rampage on the Airwaves. Finally, we can get back to our regular programming. But before we do that, I want to give a very big thank you to Leonard Susse, who has provided us and carried the show, really, for the last four episodes with his amazingly entertaining stories and anecdotes. The feedback that I get from most listeners is that when they download the show, the thing that they look forward to most is hearing what sort of ridiculous stories Leonard will come up with next. And there's so much more material that I wish I could have included, but I couldn't for whatever reasons. But I'm guessing if you've listened up to this point, then you've probably and hopefully enjoyed the last few episodes. So thank you very, very much for listening in, for downloading, and for supporting local music. And the last thing that Leonard and myself felt that we needed to address was the fact that we did leave out a lot of important bands. I think a lot of you listeners, especially those from the older age group, will feel that the coverage of the so-called history of local music is not entirely comprehensive. Trust us, we are in full agreement, but as I mentioned before, because of time constraints, we are not able to actually, you know, cover every single band, every single you know, era and genre in the history of Singapore music. Anyway, here is Leonard's final statement and wish for the Singapore music scene.
If you've been listening to all these episodes, I mean, there are a lot of local bands that I did not mention because, you know, there's no time, and, you know, we can't feature every single local band that's, you know, there are some really, really very important bands that I think I should mention, and they are Concave Scream, The Observatory, Astral, Humpback Oak, The Oddfellas, The Padres. You know, I mean, these were bands that were around when I wasn't in Singapore. I mean, I know all of them, they're all my friends, but, you know, I've never recorded them or worked with them, so I don't have any stories to tell. This whole thing is about the history of local music, but, you know, in the next few years, what I want to see happen is some of our bands actually following the example that the Sun set, or maybe even the Electrico set, or the example that Ronin has set. I mean, all three have different approaches to the music. You know, all three have different ways of promoting themselves and all that. Hopefully, you know, the torches that these three bands carry can be passed on to the next generation of younger bands to, you know, take on local music further. I want to see local music grow. I want to see, you know, like, people really supporting local music. I want to see Singaporeans being proud of their own talent and proud of their own artists, and, you know, being proud of themselves, I mean, it's time to get rid of all this, Singaporeans are not good enough, all this negative thinking, because if we can do that, right, then we can call ourselves a developed country, you know. And I also want to see the government being more active in helping out this local music scene, you know, because it's not a bad thing at all. It's what the younger generation is following is supporting. In about 10 years time, all the 16-year-olds now will be 26. And if they're already starting at 16 years old to support the local music scene and, you know, to help all these local bands, you know, in 10 years time, they'll be in positions whereby they'll be the ones controlling the media. You know, they'll be the ones that will be in positions of power to actually help promote the scene. If you're listening out there and if you're a fan of some of these bands that, you know, we've showcased or featured, keep supporting these bands, lah. And thank you really very much from the bottom of my heart for listening in and for, like, supporting these bands.
So there you have it, Leonard's final thoughts on the History of Local Music series. My name is Wayne Thunder. I hope you have enjoyed the last few shows as much as everyone at the Rampage on the Airwaves team have enjoyed producing it. On the next show, we hope to have Little Rampage back with us. Yes, Little Rampage, who is now nicely settled in Rotterdam in Holland. It will be nice to have his enthusiasm and energy back behind the microphone. So until then, take care, keep supporting local music, and we'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
Do you have producer groupies?
I can name one. His name is Levin.
What's the most outrageous pickup line you've heard? Have you gone to a girl's house right now and then be told something completely outrageous, like, you can take off your pants, you know?
Huh? That's never happened to me, lah. Wait, walan, your life history don't impose on me, leh.